We were weakened by our struggle with the world. We never grew up. We explored the large world around us, and we found a million noisy, moving, colorful objects. To protect us, we had a secret hideout.
So I'm Justin.
I'm Max.
I'm Stefan.
And you're listening to the Home Shop Machinist Podcast, episode 22. Season 2. So, 3, 2, 1. I don't know how that sounded for you, but
that sounded okay. Pretty good.
Okay, as good as three white guys are going to get anyways.
Yes, and there's the white guy joke.
Whoa.
You know, because white guys have no rhythm.
Yes. I haven't heard that one before. I haven't heard that one.
Hmm. Stick around.
Excuse me while I climb into my clown suit. Just give me a minute.
Zip.
Scary clown or normal clown?
Actually, I find clowns freaky. Do you like clowns? I do not like clowns.
Most people find them scary.
Have we talked about this before?
I don't know. Feel like we have. I mean, I don't have a problem with them.
Oh, no?
I also haven't.
Do you like
had
clowns,
of...
Stefan?
I read Stephen King's It way too early in life.
Well,
that'll do it.
I was gonna ask you, so like in Germany, are there people that like you can like rent a clown for a birthday party? Does that exist?
That's very rare. I know that only from TV speaking.
Oh, okay.
Means US movies.
Okay, because over here, like in Canada, I know of at least two businesses that you can, you know, get a clown to show up at your kid's birthday party. So, look like local to me. I don't know. Like, I'm assuming it's an American thing, but maybe.
It used to be. I honestly haven't heard of that happening firsthand in like a long time. When I was a kid growing up, it was a thing occasionally.
Sounds like a good way to traumatize kids.
Maybe. Got your clown suit on yet?
Yeah, I'm all good.
Okay.
I'm good.
I thought you sounded a little scarier.
And there's the intro.
Oh, it's the worst intro ever.
We might have to edit that part out. I don't know.
Yeah. So you guys staying safe and socially distanced? I guess I know you haven't, Stefan, because you're still going to work.
Yeah, I'm at home for almost 1.5 weeks now, burning overtime. But I'm safe at home.
Good, good.
For another week now. So
wow.
That means a lot of time in the shop.
Excellent. Doing any personal projects, or are they all like side work?
Yes, I made a set of jaws for my lathe chuck.
Excellent.
With some grippers so I can hold on to stock on a very, very minimal amount of material. They bite into the material and form a mechanical connection.
Like you would on a
mill vise with what are they called? Versa grip jaws.
Okay. Mighty Bite,
So you were posting something about a plastic part you were machining using that, correct?
Yes, exactly. And there is a video coming on it too.
Great.
So I'm curious, I saw that too, and I was fascinated, to be honest. I haven't seen anybody do that before. Did you see that somewhere else? I don't think you can buy those round inserts. You made them, right?
You can buy those round inserts from Mighty Bite.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I didn't even know that.
Yes, and they even have in their application photos, they have a lathe chuck shown with them.
Oh,
son of a gun.
But being the cheap guy I am, I made them myself. And in the end,
right
they
on.
Probably cost about double what I would have paid for them, but I made them.
Sounds about right.
Made them out of A2 tool steel and tried air hardening them myself with mixed results.
Gotcha. Yeah, I found A2 to be more difficult than I would have guessed to get a good hardness.
Yes, the hardening temperature is very high. It's almost 1,000 degrees C.
Mm.
And that's where my small oven tops out, so it's a bit painful to do. But they got hard in the end, and they seem to hold up.
Good.
But apart from that, mostly customer parts. Lots of plastic.
Ah. Medical industry stuff.
Photo development parts for a small desktop photo developing machine. That's a hard word.
Cool. Yeah, sounds like interesting.
I'm shoveling plastic chips out the shop with a snow shovel, basically.
I bet. My guess is you have plastic swarf sticking to pretty much everything.
Mm-hmm.
Is it all Delrin?
It's half Delrin and half PVC. The Delrin is nice to work with.
Yeah, it takes a nice finish.
But PVC is an utter pain. There is no way to break the chip in PVC when you turn it. If you increase the feed, the chip gets only thicker. It doesn't break. And within half a second, your complete chip pan of the lathe wraps around the chuck.
Good times.
Then you sit there like an idiot and with nippers and cut through all the chips. It's quite annoying.
There's got to be a better way.
I considered moving it to the CNC router and just mill it.
Ah.
Makes shorter chips.
Yep, for sure.
It's interesting. You don't hear, like, is this like old school developing? I don't know how much you can talk about it, but
it's really like black and white, and I think I can put a link for the show notes in. It's a desktop machine that develops the film completely.
I didn't even know such a thing existed.
And I basically make all the plastic parts for it, almost all of them.
Neat.
Wow. So this is kind of like records coming back. People want to develop their own photographs, I guess.
Good question, because the person who builds these machines, that's a separate business.
Oh, okay.
Huh. I'm only supplying some of the mechanical parts.
Right. That's really interesting.
But I will... I'm going to take a note. For the show notes, yes. And apart from that, wasting time on video games and Discord.
Excellent. What you playing for games?
Rainbow Six Siege, like an ego shooter.
Cool.
Like a tactical blah 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 shooter.
Mm-hmm.
And I bought the 2016 Doom, which is surprisingly good. It's really darn good.
I never played that one. Maybe I should pick it up. Got Far Cry 5 recently because it was finally cheap.
Haven't played Far Cry since the first one.
They're really, really good.
I might look into that. Doom single player campaign is not too long. It's like, I think, around 8 to 10 hours, so.
Okay.
Won't last long.
Yeah, I remember playing Doom when it came out.
Me too. It was pretty groundbreaking at the time.
I was a smidge too young to remember when it came out.
Okay, maybe I remember it playing it. Like, it was still kind of, you know what I mean, like floating around. Maybe it didn't come out. Maybe it was out for a few years and it went around at school or something. But
it was still a thing when I was like in fourth grade or something like that.
Yeah, that would have been like me too. Like we're all about roughly the same age. So yeah, maybe when I was in grade 6 or 7, I remember it going around, but it maybe was out for a while then already. But
I feel like I remember when it actually came out. I'm interneting.
Yeah, this requires detailed research.
I definitely remember the first Quake. I remember that.
And that was after Doom?
Yeah.
Yes, that was years after.
1993. So, yeah, for sure. I was in high school.
1993. I was like 7 years old. No, I don't remember that.
I was much younger when the original Wolfenstein came out. That was another groundbreaking one.
Okay, I was going to say there's some, one of them I know was before, so Wolfenstein was first.
Yeah. Yes. Doom was great because you know you had different you played on like a vertical plane. It wasn't all just on the same level like Wolfenstein was.
Yeah, it was 3D-ish. It wasn't true 3D, but it could do different level heights.
Right.
So, welcome to the PC Gaming Podcast.
Yeah, how'd that happen?
I have no clue. So, Max, you were
in the
shop.
Oh, hey,
that's me. I have seen you were in the shop.
Yeah, he has pictures of him in the shop.
Yes.
I found it.
Tell more.
You did.
About,
it was here it. All along. Who knew? So, yeah, being quarantined, kind of freed up some spare time, got some stuff done around the house, and got to a point where I could start focusing on some shop stuff again. And that was around the same time my buddy who lives down the street came to me and asked if I could make a part for him for his work. He was involved with some test fixture that I'm not really allowed to talk about the details, but there's one particular part that they were having a hard time finding someone willing to make, just a real small one-off thing that nobody wanted to fool with, so I said I would do it because it was small, it fit in the jeweler's lathe, the watchmaker's lathe just fine, and use the money from that to finally buy a VFD for the rivet, so the rivet is officially back in service now.
That's good.
Yeah. The little part that I made for my buddy is on Instagram if anybody hasn't seen it and is curious. It's nothing exciting, just basically a funky little coupler. And let's see, my son made a weather vane in the shop. Well, I didn't really do that. I was just kind of supervising and instructing a little bit. That was a school project. So he got to use the lathe and the mill a little bit and do some bench work. And I guess most of the other shop stuff I've been doing has been watch-related. We've got a batch of pocket watches that need various degrees of work. So, keeping me busy, I guess. But mainly, I need to decide what next to do now that the rivet is back in service. And kind of leaning towards that spindle for the Hager mill. Since that was I was preparing to do that when the VFD died last year. So pick up where I left off, I guess.
You have all the bearings for that spindle, right?
I do. Okay. I gotta finalize the design a little bit because up at the non-business end, I need to decide the motor arrangement finally. I've been sort of going back and forth on designs where the motor hangs off to the side a little bit, and I have a little belt running from the motor to a pulley on the end of the spindle.
Like Sherline style, you mean? Kind of?
Yeah. Or if I want to have the motor upside down directly above the spindle and have some kind of coupling and do direct drive. It's a DC motor with a nice speed control on it. So, you know, I don't really need belt changing for the variation of speed. And torque isn't really a big consideration because I think the largest thing this thing's going to be able to chuck up is like 5 millimeters. So I'm kind of leaning towards that. I'm just not sure what sort of coupling arrangement I should be using for higher speeds. I know you can, like, Lovejoy couplings are pretty simple. I just don't know how well suited they are to high speed applications. Any thoughts on that?
I would look into one of the Rotex couplings with the plastic star in them.
Okay, I'm not familiar with those. I'll have to do some research.
That's usually what also couples on a CNC mill the servo drives to the axis, to the ball screws.
Ah, okay.
They run reasonably quiet.
That's a plus.
Yes. And are not crazy expensive.
That's another plus. Hey, you talked me into it. But I like that idea because with the motor hanging off to the side, that obviously introduces some imbalance to the head, and the head does have a tilt function, so the more balanced I can get it, I think the better.
I just want to say personally I would belt drive it.
Would you?
Yes.
For what reasons?
Just to give more options on the speed range.
Ah.
If for some reason you want to go very slow, or you want to go higher.
I believe the motor is 5,000 RPM, and I'll need to look at the controller. I'm not sure what the minimum speed it supports is. Maybe it goes all the way down to zero, maybe it doesn't. But it's a nice controller that's supposed to use feedback to keep somewhat of a constant torque. It's a nice old Bodine setup. I think it's 130 volt DC. It's a cool little motor. You don't see them very often.
Do you know what it's off of? Is it an old sewing machine or something?
No, it's an industrial thing. It's a brushless DC motor, probably for, probably servo for some machine control if I had to guess, but I'm really not sure. I'm also not sure how old it is. I don't know if they're still in use, but if you scour around on eBay, you can usually find one or two of them. But it's not the easiest finding 130 volt DC controllers. So you pretty much have to use the Bodine controller with it.
Oh, right. That's right out of us. Where did you get 130 volt DC?
You mean the power itself out of the controller?
Oh, the controller gets powered by regular AC and then...
Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, then they rectum fry it, I think, right? I mean,
yes.
Rectify.
Rectum. Darn near killed them.
Now that I got that joke, I'm done. Like this, we can stop recording.
All right, see you, everybody.
Yeah, 22 minute podcast.
Yay.
it's a record for us.
Yeah, I think that's all I've got going on really at the moment. Oh, I still need to make that motor and countershaft mount for the watchmaker's lathe. When I was making the part for my buddy, the crummy little sheet metal bracket that holds my motor in place started to give up the ghost. And it's kind of hanging on by half of its surface area. So I think that'll be the next thing that I put on the mill. There's not a heck of a lot of turning work on that, but I'll probably prioritize that a little bit ahead of everything else, just so if I need to use that machine, I'm not stuck.
You said that you have a design for that, right?
I do. I guess it's not 100% done. I'm still agonizing over a few details that really don't even matter, but I could start making it any time, I suppose. I can't remember if I shared that one with you on Fusion, Justin.
I don't think so. I know I remember us talking about it at some point or emailing.
We may have talked about it on a previous podcast episode. It was quite a while ago.
I think it was the last one.
Oh, really?
It's not that long ago.
Yeah, that was just a few weeks. Let's see, the last time we recorded, I don't remember what the date was.
It was in February, I think.
So that was before I went to Vegas for our work stuff. So I went to Con Expo in Vegas and got to see all the cool stuff that they have there.
Right in the midst of a pandemic brewing.
Yes, before it was pandemic before anybody really cared about it. So like the first few days I was there, so back up, we got there before Con Expo, because our annual user conference, every 3 years we have it in Vegas so that it can coincide, you know, with Con Expo. We have our user conference before, and then a bunch of us stay out for the Con Expo as well. So when we got out there for our show, I was just starting to hear on the news, you know, stuff brewing. And by the time, I guess it was day two of Con Expo, it was pretty clear that attendance was way down. A bunch of big vendors had pulled out. They started going around and asking people if, you know, if they'd mind heading out early, because it became obvious that they weren't going to need that many people there. So I said, sure. And that same afternoon, I went out into the lobby and I made phone calls to get my flight changed. And I could tell our travel agent, she's a one-person show. She was clearly pretty frazzled. I think there were a lot of people changing flights at the last minute on her, and she was trying to deal with it all. My flight got changed, no problems. And then the following day, they announced that they were ending the entire show early. And all of a sudden, everybody who was out there for Con Expo, which is a lot of people, was trying to get out of Vegas at the same time. And, you know, there were people trying to change their flights and having the flights sell out in the middle of trying to book them, and it was awful. So I changed mine just in time and had no problem getting out. The show itself is pretty cool. It was the first time I had stayed out there for that show. It's a lot of being on your feet, but there's definitely a lot of neat stuff there.
Yeah, it's a massive show.
It sure is. I didn't even see close to all of it. I didn't even see close to half of it, I don't think. I saw in my Instagram feed while I was out there something from Mike Rowe talking about Con Expo and how Cat had a show that they were sponsoring there. Some operators contest. I guess they had operators using heavy equipment to perform, you know, all manner of stunts and feats, and, you know, the winner got a prize. I thought that was pretty awesome, and, you know, I was kind of bummed that I didn't know about it before it happened, because I would have walked wherever that was on the grounds and gone to watch that. And then I learned after that Cat apparently was one of the vendors that had pulled out, so I'm wondering how they ran that show. So I wonder if they actually really had it at Con Expo, or if that's just what their marketing people said and they actually had it somewhere else.
Yeah. One place I worked for a few years ago, it was quite a few years ago now, they used to fly their whole design engineering department to Con Expo every time it was held.
Ah.
So they would, because they let you crawl all over machines and stuff, so.
Yep.
Yeah, it's quite the show. Crazy times, man. I could only imagine what it would have been like getting out of Vegas then, because that was when it was getting pretty thick.
It was a little chaotic when we finally did fly out, and from what I understand, it was quite a bit worse the following couple days when the rest of our guys were trying to get home. Yeah, I thought for sure I was going to end up getting the coronavirus when I got home, having spent so much time in basically the dirtiest place on the planet, but I guess I made it out unscathed.
Yeah.
Usually it's hard to get not sick on a trade show anyway.
This is one of the few times where I got back and I usually feel kind of run down and crummy, not like I get seriously ill or anything, but I felt all right this time.
Perfect.
Yeah, coronavirus must have staved off everything else.
Yeah. So, like, I know this is a Home Shop Machinist podcast, but
are you sure?
I've been thinking about IMTS and whether it's going to go or not. I think it's going to be canceled. But that's the International Machine Tool Show. But
I would imagine it's going to. When is that held?
September?
Yeah, man, that could go either way.
I read that some of the large vendors already pulled out, like DMG Mori. Ooh. Even if they stated in their press release that it's due to other reasons.
Yeah, yeah, we all know that that's PR.
Right.
At this point. And DMG had a huge booth there. I've never been there, and it's interesting. I was talking with somebody, actually, on the... You know, we were going to mention the Instamachinist Discord that has been created. Stefan's been promoting it. I think that's why everybody's there, to be honest.
That's possible. We'll talk later about it.
Yeah, yeah. But I said this was the year I've never been, and I was thinking about going. I was going to think about asking either my dad or somebody to go with me, you know. And then I'm like, even if it goes now, it's going to be like a skeleton of a show. So I was kind of disappointed, but I understand, like, from a safety standpoint, it's difficult, very difficult.
Germany has canceled basically every large gathering up till August now.
Yeah. And is the EMO show is it in January? Or when is it?
EMO, like, is EMO? Normally mid of the year. But this year it's in Italy. Or not.
So it was completely nixed?
I guess so. I haven't read about it yet, because I was not going to Italy anyway.
Right. Oh, I didn't realize it moved around. That's me being naive, I guess.
It's alternating between Hanover and somewhere in Italy.
Oh, so it's two fixed places every other time?
Yes.
Okay, okay. That's like the equivalent of IMTS, right, in Europe?
It's larger.
So it is the largest machine tool show in the world.
It's the largest machine tool show in the world, that's correct. And the place in Hanover is the largest is it a venue for trade shows in the world, generally. Hmm. DMG has like one building for themselves there.
One building?
Yes.
I still wouldn't buy a DMG. I'm just putting that out there.
I would not mind one.
No, I know. I'm just...
We have a bunch of them at work, and they're fine. They're running fine.
I think they only have a handful of truly bad machines, I think. The rest of it's... I think they make solid stuff.
In the early days, they built some really weird machines, like a three axis with a manual four and fifth axis.
Oh,
that was an odd machine.
Yeah, I was gonna say, Max, I was been following you on Instagram, and you picked up some of those watches. Man, that one watch had so much dog fur in it. That's crazy.
That was just the tip of the iceberg with that thing. That thing was... So I posted a picture of it last night with the movement in the holder and running, and it runs awesome. What happened when I tried to case it back up when I was putting the second hand on, one of the pinions that's inside has a very long pivot that goes all the way through the front plate, and that's what the second hand mounts onto. And I was installing the second hand, and then I took it back off just to kind of move it a little bit, and that entire pivot came out with it. Someone had repivoted that pinion, and it came loose fighting against the friction of the second hand. So that thing was just barely in there, hanging on the whole time I was cleaning it, and I never noticed. So I have to take that whole thing back apart. Whoever was in there last also lost one of those balance cap jewel setting screws. There are a lot of evidence of a lot of iffy reassembly, like a lot of the settings and stuff only go in one way, or the screws don't quite line up, like where the heads of the screws clamp down around them. They're kind of countersunk a little bit. And those were all like misaligned and just kind of jammed in there. So it kind of, it had some pretty novice level servicing done to it, it seems. So it took probably twice as long as it would have otherwise, and I still have to tear it back apart to replace that that fourth wheel pinion.
I have a question. Repinioning, does that mean that you drill out the pinion and put in a new axle?
Correct. Repivoting.
Yes.
The pinion and the pivots are typically one piece, and then they're pressed into the hub of the wheel, assuming that it's mounted to a wheel, which normally they are. And it's not uncommon, especially for those longer ones that the second hand mounts to get broken, sheared off. And it's fairly common practice to repivot them. You know, you just get a nice accurate machining setup and you just carefully drill a hole for a new pinion wire to fit in. You know, typically you want a friction fit rather than having to use any kind of glue or anything, because a lot of the cleaning solvents used will just dissolve any glue. And that's probably what happened in my case. Like, they probably glued it in, and then when I was cleaning it, it loosened the glue, if I had to guess.
I just wanted to ask if gluing is frowned upon.
Yeah, just because it's not going to last very long due to, you know, exactly what I encountered. I mean, it's not the easiest thing to do right, but it's not the most difficult thing to do for as far as watch repairs go either. But I mean, it's easy to accidentally drill an oversized hole and then, I don't know, I guess just laziness, add some glue and call it a day, right?
Now, by glue, like, is that Loctite or?
I honestly don't know. If you were going to use anything, what you should use, you shouldn't use super glue because the fumes will corrode everything else around it.
Okay.
I don't know if Loctites tend to have that same problem. I've never used Loctite in a spot where that would be a concern. Maybe a little bit of thin epoxy? I don't know. I just wouldn't do it, so I've never really bothered to think about it.
Better get a laser welder.
Yes.
And just weld it in place.
It's more common for clockmakers to do. They're dealing with much larger diameter pivot sizes. But you see it done on watches sometimes too. But these are all mass-produced movements that I'm dealing with currently. So, I mean, someone could have got the part pretty easily. They just didn't want to wait, I guess. Or maybe just wanted to practice.
I mean, like, you can order the part online somewhere?
Yeah, I mean, you can't obviously get them from the manufacturer because, in this case, it's a Waltham. I don't know how many decades they've been out of business, but the better part of a century, probably. And all of the new old stock parts are just kind of scattered around various places. From time to time, third-party manufacturers will step up and crank out some pieces, like jewel settings or balance staffs or what have you. So it's usually not that difficult to find the parts for a lot of these older mass-produced watches, but they are sometimes more expensive than you might expect. It does pay, certainly, to be able to make your own stuff where you can save, you know, 50, 60 bucks.
If you only had a pinion mill.
If only.
Was somebody working on one of those?
Some schmuck. I'll get back on it someday. Some days at least a little sooner than it was.
So I am curious, speaking, because you were posting videos on YouTube, Max, and like both you and I, like, we're pretty, like, our YouTube channels aren't really big at all, but
right.
Stefan, so how's YouTube been since this whole coronavirus went down?
It hasn't changed much so far.
Not for you? Okay.
I looked on the analytics today and didn't see a huge change or spike or something like that. I noticed that the internet here is in general way slower.
Makes sense, I guess.
Ping times and overall up and download speed is not what it used to be. with everyone sitting at home and binge-watching Netflix.
Right. Hey, it's not going to watch itself.
You got to do your part, right? You got to...
So far I cannot tell a large difference.
Hey, speaking of internet real quick, this Discord server, is this the one that's called CNC Lounge by any chance, or is it a different one?
That's a different one.
What's the one you're talking, because I've had Discord for a while, I just didn't know there was any machining stuff on it.
Okay, then let's talk quickly about it.
Yes, yeah, let's.
Okay, if you're a machinist or interested in machining and you want to waste even more time out of your day as you already do with Instagram, YouTube, and whatnot, there is an application called...
Are you reading
called...
this from a card?
No, that's...
Yeah, it sounds like he's rehearsed this.
That's right off the cuff.
Carry on.
There is a software called Discord. That's a chat software. Usually that's used in... more like gaming, to communicate during gaming, but it can also be used for other things. And there, Kyle Warren set up a server called Insta Machinists, and there are many subgroups in there, directed at different topics like metrology tools, CNC mills, and of course most important, manual lathes.
Excellent.
And
yes. Are you listening, John Saunders?
And you can do text chat there, you can post pictures in there, you can shit talk, you can
Wow, that's assumed. I mean,
yes,
you could.
It is the internet after all.
There is also the option for voice channels, so you can talk to each other if you want, if you are that social.
Ugh, no thanks.
So, I think we will put a link in the description, or Justin will, I hope.
Yes, I will. I have signed up. I was relatively early. I was there before 100 people showed up. So, Stefan was there even before that.
discord.gg/something obvious, or is it a bunch of gobbledygook?
It's gobbledygook.
No, it's great, gobbledygook.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't even know how that works. Can you claim your own slash? How does that... Yeah, you
I
have
really
to pay for
know.
That? Or
I have no clue. I cannot give an educated answer here.
Yeah. We will definitely include that in the show notes for sure.
It's fun, and so far it's very civilized.
Oh, give it time.
It's the internet at all.
Yes, it does feel a little Wild West. I could see how to be honest with you, that was like the... I've been thinking about Discord for a while, and I that was what made me sign up, and I actually subscribed to a group, but I could see how it could go really bad quickly.
I expected it to be way more practical machinist.
Oh, okay. Yeah, those people are too old though, Stefan.
Whoa.
To be honest.
Well, I didn't say it. It wasn't me. It wasn't me this time.
It was me. Most of the people on Practical Machines that are like picking on people, I don't know if they'd sign up for Discord or not, to be honest.
I feel like they probably wouldn't.
This newfangled internet.
Do you think?
No.
Yeah, Max has said no. Stefan's being the Canadian here and being polite. That's my job.
I'm diplomatic here. That's another...
Who's that?
My apologies.
I already drank mine.
And me too, that's
more.
Why I opened another one.
I need more.
I'd offer you one of mine, but... Well, yeah, this...
We're talking now for about 50 minutes, and Justin still has not talked about what he's up to currently.
Justin, what you doing?
I'm delaying. Stalling.
Yes.
What beer did you open, Max?
Narragansett. Hi, neighbor.
Oh, hello.
You know what? We should get them as a sponsor. What do you think?
A beer sponsor would be fantastic.
It'd be perfect. Made on honor, sold on merit. The official beer of the clam. I'm reading this right from the can. I'm not making it up.
That's terrible.
I reserve judgment.
No,
if they end up becoming our sponsors, you're not going to want to say stuff like that.
Say what?
That is terrible.
It's terrible. Is it? Yeah, you said it was okay.
No. The slogans.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about the beer.
No. The official beer of the clam. Come on. Who puts that on a can?
I don't know.
Anyways.
I'm holding a can here, and it says, brewed in North America.
That's a good start.
So, is anybody want to make a guess? It's a warning.
Yes.
Well then. So are we going to... Let's play guess the beer.
Is it Labatt?
Okay. Yes. I believe so. Wait a second. No, it's not Labatt.
Oh. I don't win.
It's the other one. Which I think they're owned by the same company. Molson? Now anyway. Yes, it's Molson. Okay.
I had a 50-50 shot.
Okay, so let's do the next thing. So that's what it says on the top of the can.
What does the bottom say? See other end?
Front towards enemy.
I didn't use a can opener on it. Don't worry, Max.
Okay.
So it's 5.4% alcohol per volume. Okay.
I'm with you.
Any, no guesses yet?
Oh, that's all we get? All right.
No. If I start saying the next stuff. Okay, so the can is mostly blue.
I still just want to say Labatt Blue.
Yeah, no, I would not drink that. No. Does that exist there? I'm curious. Oh, does it? No.
We drank it in college from time to time because a buddy of mine liked it.
Oh. Is he Canadian or something?
Not as far as I know.
No,
no he's not.
This is a wheat beer.
Oh, huh.
It was a wheat beer. It is empty. I'm just clarifying.
Okay. Blue.
It says it's Belgian white. Now,
oh,
somebody should be able to get.
It's not Blue Moon.
Yeah. It's Belgian Moon. Yeah. Which actually, like, some people don't like it, but it is actually a decent wheat beer, even though it's like a mackerel beer.
Is it? It's actually called Belgian Moon.
Here it is. Yeah.
Is it the same as what we call Blue Moon?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Okay.
Just Canadians, they call it Belgian Moon.
I gotcha. I like it pretty well, too. A little bit of a fruity flavor.
It's actually pretty good. I think even... Like, I don't know if you like wheat beer or not, Stefan. I think you would probably drink it.
He's German. He has to.
I'm not sure what that is.
You're not sure?
Is that a... we call it a Weizen, I think.
Yeah, this one's like the... it doesn't have any coriander in it, though. Like,
coriander?
Well, like, that's spicy. You know what I mean? The Belgian Moon's got no spice in it.
It's blueberry, isn't it?
Kind of, yeah.
No.
If you go on Beer Advocate, they actually don't mind it.
It's not flavored. It's just they use blueberries in it, and it's got a little hint of that.
No, you don't do anything to your beer.
I don't know.
No, we don't do that here.
Hey, I'm from New England. We have citrus IPAs. That's just how we roll.
Were you the one who got his knickers in a knot about the... There was some Kern posting with somebody having a beer in the wrong glass?
That
was you, wasn't it?
That was no glass. That's like a test tube. It's a shame.
That was you who got all upset, right?
Yes.
I missed this.
A beer glass starts at half a liter.
I do agree with that, I will say.
And goes only up in size, not down.
Wait, let me go get my Stein.
Yes, exactly.
This is gold.
Just to clarify this. Beer comes in half liter bottles. Everything else is just too small.
I won't disagree with you.
Some parts of Germany have 0.3 liter beers. Those are weirdos.
Amateurs.
Oh boy.
If we only had a calculator to calculate from metric liters to gallons.
I feel that somebody's trying to make a segue here.
A mechanical calculator, maybe.
Yeah, because if an EMP goes off, we need to be able to calculate, right?
Yes.
What would we use in such an eventuality?
I don't know. It has to fit in your pocket, I'm told.
So that rules out a lot of abacuses. Abacai? What's the plural of abacus?
Abacai. I like it. Yes.
It could also fit in the glove box of a car.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, come on.
Oh, am I supposed to take the bait?
That's terrible.
This is why this is the best Machinist podcast.
Because it's awful?
At least the first one.
We are the first.
That's true.
I think we're just the earliest surviving one at this point.
Yeah. Well, I was going to originally spell the worst W-U-R-S-T for Stefan.
Ooh. But I like it. Put the little umlauts on there. Yeah.
Yes. I've been posting on Instagram that I'm trying to build a Curta mechanical calculator. Do you feel better now, Stefan?
Yeah. Now we're talking.
Yes. I originally flipped through the drawings and thought, you know, how hard could this be?
That sounds like out of Top Gear. How hard could it be? Okay, let's start at the beginning. Where do you even get the drawings?
Oh, okay. So I've
been dying to know that.
There is... okay, to properly say Liechtenstein, you have to have a couple beers.
No, okay. That was pretty good.
Was that pretty good?
Yeah. He's had a couple beers.
Okay. One. So there's a museum in Liechtenstein called, I can't remember exactly. It's something .li. It's probably one of the few websites that actually have a .li end for Liechtenstein.
Yeah, Liechtenstein is not that big anyway. You can drive.
No, are they? Do you consider them a bunch of weirdos?
No, they are great.
Oh, are they? Okay.
You can drive through that country in like half an hour.
So, To be honest with you, like my European history isn't the greatest. Originally, I thought that they were. Are they? They border on Germany, right?
They border on. Oh shit! I should know this. Switzerland, Austria.
Okay. Italy
and Germany, I think. I should know this.
Well, you're the German. Like, come on now.
Yeah, but I'm not sure.
Anyway, so all the drawings are available. At least I think they're all there. I still haven't assembled the model, so there may be something missing.
Well, that'll be a lot of work to go through just to find out you can't make a couple of the parts, huh?
Yeah, so at that point, I'm either going to have to beg somebody to give me a Curta calculator, even if it doesn't work, or I'm not sure. Because they're quite pricey if you want to buy a working one off eBay.
Yeah, I looked at them. They sure are.
I looked years ago into them. I saw them on Tested. They showed them, and I immediately looked at eBay to buy one, but they're like... €1,000 upwards.
Yeah, they're about $1,500 US, which is kind of crazy. They may go for less. I know, Max, you sent me an auction, and I haven't checked if... Did that end? I think that might have ended.
I'm not sure. I forgot to follow back up on it.
But
I was curious, though. Stuff like that's going to go for a little less now, I guess, because of, you know, economy and whatever, but I'm sure they're still going to be really expensive.
But, yeah, anyway, so there's this museum that has all the scan drawings, at least I think what they had on hand, of the Type 1. There was two of them that Curta built. There's the Type 1 and then there's the Type 2. And they do have both sets of production drawings, which are actually very, very good.
The drawings really look good.
They're fantastic.
Yes, they look really like something you could use.
Yeah, like I'm going through the process of, so I'm drawing them all up into Fusion. Somebody previously has drawn them all into SolidWorks. And there's a project called Recurta on GitHub, of all places, that has a commit for a set of drawings in SolidWorks.
Hmm.
I don't know if anybody knows about that, but I found that. The thing is that when I started going through those models, there are errors in some of the models. Because I'm not going to say that a machinist didn't model it, but it feels that way. It feels that whoever modeled it in SolidWorks wasn't necessarily a machinist, so some of the ways they interpreted the drawings are kind of impossible to make unless you have like an EDM machine, which they wouldn't have had.
Right.
Or they wouldn't have used that for production work, I don't think. It's too slow.
Some of those parts are diabolical, though.
Yeah. Yeah. It really is something else. I cannot believe that somebody actually designed this without CAD.
It's pretty humbling, isn't it?
That was like in the 60s, wasn't it? Or earlier?
Well, it was earlier. So the maker of the Curta, it's a really fascinating story. And anybody who's kind of interested in history would find it interesting, even if you're not a machinist. But so basically the guy who designed it sold mechanical calculators, and they built mechanical calculators in a factory. And then the Second World War comes along, and he ends up in a prison camp, Buchenwald specifically, but
mm-hmm.
He started designing it before the war started. He finished designing it while at this camp. He gets out, and then his company's business, which still stayed operating because of the war, wasn't in any condition to make this product. So he ended up, I don't want to say schmoozing, but selling the Prince of Liechtenstein to build this thing, because they wanted to become this manufacturing powerhouse. And they saw this particular device as a way to do that. So they built this factory it was an insane amount of money back in 1940 something or other, probably 48, 47. And they started producing this calculator, but then they got into a rift and they basically tried to steal the design from him. But all the patents had his name on them, so he ended up negotiating some sort of settlement out of this.
Hmm.
And he ended up getting royalties for every Curta that was produced, but he became estranged from the factory. And then they kind of sort of parted ways, and that was sort of the end of it.
Huh.
I think in the 60s, Curta was bought out by Hilti, like the...
The drill company.
Yeah, like the power tool company. Which I didn't realize, but is still based in Liechtenstein.
Yes, they are.
And they continued production until basically the HP, the RPN, was it the 35? The HP 35 calculator came out.
That sounds right.
And then, the electronics revolution basically destroyed any market that this product's going to have.
Made it obsolete.
But yeah, it's like a calculator that's like the size of a coffee cup, and it's got over 600 parts in it.
It's completely insane. It can do addition, subtraction, multiply, and division?
Yes, yes. Yeah. And you crank a handle.
It looks like a coffee grinder. Or a
pepper mill,
yes.
So there's been quite a few people who've tried to post to build it. Nobody has successfully built it, and I understand why, after going through most of the drawings now.
I mean, it's challenging, to say the least.
But, yeah, it's going to be interesting. I am determined to build it. I think I posted on Instagram, this is my like corn tool and cutter grinder.
do you want to build one, or do you want to build like a small run of them?
Because I would. Now, a few things. So partially what I've decided to undertake this project is because I do have some hobby grade CNC equipment. I don't think you could build it without that, but it makes it a lot easier. Otherwise, the amount of tooling that you would need would be very expensive.
Yeah, there are a lot of stamped parts that you would have to make cutting tools for. You can't just mill them out.
Yeah, precisely. So I'm going to probably make more than one. Lots of people have said, why don't we make this and sell it and make money? And
no.
That's never, like, anybody who goes into a project like this and thinks that, yeah, you're right. Because after you make all those parts, you have to assemble it. And there's actually a YouTube video of somebody who must have worked at the factory or was very familiar with how to repair Curtas assembling it. And I think it's like 40 or 50 minutes long.
And that's someone that could probably do it in their sleep, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, he was literally, like, picking up stuff and putting it together. And so, like, unless people want to pay a lot of money for a customized Curta, yeah, maybe I'll build more, or maybe somebody will build more, but it's not, like, something you're going to make money at.
Do you know if they designed it that well that they could assemble it without any hand fitting, or was there...
Well, manual so I've work? Been through... That's a good question. And I'm not exactly sure. Although some of the drawings have parts that are like configurations of each other. If that makes sense.
Like assembly drawings. Assuming,
no, they're part drawings, but parts that have different lengths. And the only reason I can see that is that they have to pick something. Either there was a manufacturing flaw and they made these parts so that they could reuse the parts, or they need those parts to time the mechanism somehow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Understand.
Which I think that's probably the case. But aside from that, I think I there's an interview with the designer, and it's fairly popular if you're kind of into the whole Curtis story, where somebody interviews him when he's probably about 80 years old, and he talks about sort of his goal for when he designed this product. And he was very much into, he called it the American way of manufacturing things, about tolerancing parts and such. And I think he took a lot of, because his dad lived in the United States or worked in the United States before the turn of the 1900s, was heavily influenced by like the gun industry in the States, by the sounds of it.
Ah.
And about like basically designing assemblies that can go together without the need for fitting. So I think that's probably why the drawings are toleranced in microns of,
like that's still common in metric drawings.
Oh, okay. Like I said, I'm kind of going on my... But he was very much about trying to design something that you could manufacture with tolerancing as opposed to doing hand fitting. So, I don't know. But you can tell, like, the way the parts are designed, it's very heavily influenced by, I would think, like watchmaking. They must have had a ton of watchmaking people at the factory.
Making stuff. I can imagine that they had rows of hand lever machines, like,
yeah,
set up for one operation, and then the part just walks the line through.
Yep.
Yeah. It's interesting. I've enjoyed drawing up the parts. Like I said, the drawings are very good. We'll see what happens once we get a 3D model going.
It's a really cool project for sure.
And it's forcing me to... Part of the reason that I kind of want to do this now is because there's another part that I've been working on. I'm not working on it as much now because I'm not working that much because of the virus. But the parts, I'm not going to say, are similar. The part that I'm designing and the assembly I'm working on for somebody else is kind of similar in terms of its scale and the types of tooling you'll need. So I'm trying to overlay both those projects together, if that makes sense. So
it's the Curta is basically a skill builder.
Precisely.
That's...
Yeah, it's like my Robin Renzetti's helicopter.
That's heck of a skill builder.
It sure is.
And I may have to cut a few corners, but...
Don't you dare.
I know, but...
You're going to buy a wire EDM?
We were going to talk about that, but not a wire EDM, I don't know. But the sinker EDM, after going through the drawings once, I'm like, maybe building a sinker EDM is not a bad idea.
I have the book here from Mr. Fleming.
Do you? Okay. So, full disclosure, I sent them a list of things that I think we should talk about. And number one on the list was EDM in the home shop.
Yay!
So that moves quite nicely. What else have I guess for other shop updates? I made some backing plates out of lifting weights, so everybody can cringe now. Get it out of your system.
I have seen this. How does lifting weight iron machine?
This stuff machined really well.
No sand in it.
Nothing.
Nice.
Nope. Nah, I think it's a crapshoot when you buy them. And to be clear, I did not buy new weights off Amazon that shipped directly from China. These weights were made in Canada probably many years ago. So
nice.
But I machine quite well. I wouldn't want to do it. I'll just say that I wouldn't want to face it with high-speed steel, the outer skin. I used carbide. But after that, it was fine. Like, I drilled it and tapped it, and the skin was pretty tough.
And any special features on the back plates? Fine, adjust some...
No, not really. They're just straight up back plates. I may do what you do. I turn the register fairly snug, but I may dial that back a little bit. We'll see how they work.
Yeah, if the chuck is tight, if the chuck is repeating nice, then it shouldn't be a problem.
No, I to be honest, yeah, I haven't used them yet. I just finished them up. It took me way longer than it should have because of, you know, having kids that aren't going to school, but. So I got that done. I don't know what else I've been. There's been a few other things. Oh, I was going to ask you, Stefan, before we go into EDM. Have you ever made, or do you know anybody that's made like a workstop for a rotary table?
A workstop
that goes in the back, you know, in the spindle.
Nope.
Okay.
I would put probably something into the Morse table to bore.
Yeah, that's what I've drawn up. I just didn't know if... And I haven't seen that many things.
I would just use a Morse taper to call it.
Yeah, I suppose you could.
And
I don't have Morse taper to call it, so...
And pull it in with a draw screw from the back.
And then just put a stop in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Because I was thinking about... I need a spindle stop for my lathe. Facing parts to length is otherwise quite annoying. And I might just do what Robin does and put a collet into the spindle and hold a stop with that.
Right.
On his Harding, the chuck can mount on the spindle when a collet is in the spindle.
Same with mine. It's a pretty good idea, but I haven't tried it yet.
And on my Emco, I can do the same. So that's probably what I'm going to do.
So the only work stop I have for my lathe is integrated to the lever closing arrangement. It's part of the separate draw tube that you have to use with the lever closer. And a lot of the times, you know, I'm not necessarily using the lever closer when I'm doing this stuff. So I think it's a matter of time before I try that collet method, but I think it'll work pretty well.
You can't do very long work, though.
Correct.
No.
Because you're limited to the distance of your chuck face to the collet.
Right.
Typically, I'm doing pretty short stuff.
So we got to get Robin back on here. So for Robin with this Hardinge, the Hardinge has a 5C taper in the spindle itself, right?
Yes.
And then he puts a 5C on the like a 5C nose on it. Is that what you're saying?
No, he just puts a collet into it and a piece of round like Thompson shafting as a stop.
Oh yeah. Okay, so yeah, so for with his stop for his 3-jar or whatever.
And the chuck and the chuck goes on the outside taper. Spindle, right? On the Harding taper.
Right.
I think you did a video on YouTube on this.
I think he did, I'm now pretty that you sure. mentioned it. Yeah, so I want to make up something for a stop. I'll probably just, like you said, use the MT taper. Because that comes out of a part that I was actually making for somebody else, and I was slotting it, and I need a stop for a 5C collet block in the mill. Because when you do multiples, it needs to be repeatable. So
slotting like a single point slotting on the shaper?
No, slot, like putting a, like using a slitting saw in the middle.
Okay.
You know, and then so you basically, it had a bunch of, it had a like a single slot in it at the end of it, but I had like 30 or 40 of them to make. Okay. So, and the tolerance was about, was plus or minus a thou on the slot depth. So that was
pretty tight.
But yeah, I have a few notes here for topic du jour. And one of them was EDM machining, and you have the book. I don't have the book. I was thinking about buying it.
There are two books, both from Fleming.
Who was a Canadian, I believe.
Was he? Or is he?
I think he was. Yeah. I don't know if he's still alive. That's a good question.
I think he still is. There is an older book and a newer one that's called How to Build a Pulse EDM, I think. But even the newer book, some of the parts are already obsolete and you barely can get them. That's a tough one.
So is that the problem with Home Shop? Like so this all started with a post I saw on Home Shop Machinist from the fellow named MacGyver. Anybody who's familiar with HSM knows him. Yep. I think his first name's Mike, actually, and he posts articles in the Home Shop Machinist magazine as well. And he picked up a machine that he bought. Apparently, it was in my back door at an auction that I didn't even know went on a year ago. A machine. Was the guy who made them? I can't remember. Did Robert, was it Langlois, make an EDM book as well?
I don't know.
Let me look. I think he may have. I could be wrong. Anyway, he picked up a machine that somebody built. No, so that's the fellow who built the machine. So I think it was based on the book that you referenced, Stefan.
So was it a sinker EDM, a RAM EDM?
Yeah, it was a sinker.
Okay.
So he wrote the book with Ben Fleming. The EDM how-to book by Ben Fleming. Is that the one you have, right?
No, I have the newer one.
Oh, okay.
I can see it from here, but I can't read the full title.
It's okay. And then there's another book by Robert Langlois that is called Remove Metal by Spark Erosion Through Electric Discharge Machining. And supposedly there's a design in there, I think, that is an up design from Ben Fleming's original design. I think he made it bigger, I think. But I don't have the books, so I was thinking about buying them. But you said the parts are kind of hard to get?
On the older book, there is a very obsolete DC servo controller for to make a normal motor into basically a servo. And that part is basically unobtainium. There are some alternative parts, but I think they can't handle very high motor current, so that's might be a problem. And on the newer book, there are also some parts that are a bit sketchy to get already. So I'm not too sure about that. It would be cool. I would love to build one, but the electronic side is a bit... I don't know enough about them to judge if the design works at all. I haven't seen much work done with those home built EDMs at all. Most just burn a hole or remove a tap and call it good. But I want to use it, if I had one, to burn actually forms into material, square cutouts or even 3D forms.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Because just for tap removal, it's a little bit much of a machine.
Right.
Yeah. So there's like the hobby crowd in Germany, there's not too many guys that have EDM machines, unless they bought old ones.
Friend of mine has a small wire EDM in his barn.
Wow. Okay.
And another guy has a small AG, which is a Swiss company, Singer EDM. that looks almost like a heavy-duty benchtop drill press.
Right.
And that's quite a nice machine. That's already a small industrial machine. It has an XY cross table and the controlled C axis for EDMing, for actually working. Okay. It's a manual machine, so you position XY and then it just goes down. It cannot do like a thread or something like that.
Right.
A CNC sinker EDM can do threads or all sorts of weird things and burn at an angle because they have a controlled spindle that can it cannot only go down in C but also spin. So it can
right.
you make a copper screw as an electrode and it can screw itself into the material and burn a thread into carbide. But that
I was going to say, does he make his own electrodes?
Yes.
Okay.
He uses copper. Right. You can use either copper or graphite, but graphite is super, super, super messy to work with.
Yeah, it's fantastically clean. What are you talking about?
At work, almost all of our EDM electrodes are graphite, and we machine them on a five-axis DMG machine. And the machine looks like a coal mine on the inside.
I can imagine.
Yeah, there's an industry close to where I live. They do zinc castings, and all their molds are made out of graphite.
Oh.
Because they machine like crazy, right? Like, graphite machines well, it's just extremely dirty.
Yes. It leaves super nice edges and corners and doesn't create a burr. It also grinds very nice. You can take like a 10 millimeter cut with a surface grinder in it and they have no problems, but the dust is at first when you start to machine it you think, oh, the dust is not too bad, but after half an hour or something like that you notice that there is everything is slippy and has this black dust on it.
Right.
And when you blow your nose it doesn't look very healthy, so dust extraction and respirator is a good idea.
Huh. Yeah, no, I was just curious. I know that there was a build in the Home Shop Machinist. I'll put that in the show notes too about building an EDM machine for the shop, but it doesn't seem that there's been much movement for home users. There's this company called Bax EDM that looks like they've came out with something.
Is that the one that Ben Krasno had a controller?
I don't know if they're still even. I think, yeah, that was the one that had, because he'd had the YouTube video where they went through a ball bearing. Is that the one I'm thinking of?
Yes.
Yeah, so yeah, that's the company that sent him one, I believe. But I don't even know if they're still a going concern. I know, I remember when they came out, but they're not cheap. Like, I think I'm just on their website. I forget how much they want for one.
Probably too much if you have to ask.
There's a shop here somewhere. Or shop.
This makes for great podcasting.
What, me searching online? It's fantastic.
Yes, that's the best content ever.
I've done my homework, people.
This is the most Max, engaging I think now is a good listener experience.
Sorry, it's a 3,000 euros. Ooh. The BX17 arc generator.
I'll buy a used one.
Yeah, that's just for the arc generator. You still got to build all the...
Yeah, that's no machine at all.
No.
So there are two very small wire EDM machines out there.
Like professional ones? Industrial that end up ones, in your shop?
Yes, that you could buy and use. There is a small brother with, I think, 100 millimeter and one with 150 millimeter X travel. And those are really tiny machines.
Hmm.
And they show up on used machinery dealers. So... let's run out and buy these. And small Syncro EDMs are even more common. Xello, I think, US or Canadian company. It's almost a benchtop machine, a small RG machine, Swiss, and a Chamu, that's also Swiss, or Chamillus, whatever. They also built a very small Syncro EDM. So to be realistic, in my opinion, if you want a functioning EDM, you better buy a used industrial one. If you want a project, that's another thing.
No, I want tools to make tools.
Oh, shoot.
What do you think this is, Stefan?
Oh, darn it.
A practical machinist or something?
We're the Impractical Machinist podcast.
Yes, that's right.
He forgot where he was.
Well, I sent an email to Max. Like, so how many watchmakers are using EDM machines? There has to be.
Oh yeah, it's not uncommon at all. In fact, Nicholas Hako, in Australia, they are using EDM, and I mean that's one example. You can find them on Instagram, as a matter of fact. But I remember reading an article years ago about use of EDM in watchmaking parts, and especially for a lot of the flat parts that require real tight tolerances, it's common. And not just for the parts, for things like tungsten carbide stamps for stamping out accurate parts, wire EDM for that in watchmaking is also not unheard of.
Yeah, that's the classic application for punch tooling. Cut the punches and the die plates with the required taper and be good to go.
Yep, pretty slick. Some of those components would be very time consuming to produce to the right tolerances on conventional machinery. And you've got stock that's that thin, making parts that small. You get into a lot of challenges with putting it on a mill, for example.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the beauty of EDM, right? The cutting forces are so low that...
Yeah, you basically have none.
Right.
You only have the pressure from the flushing.
Right.
Yeah, it's an interesting topic, and one that I know that like maybe 10, 15 years ago, it was quite popular. It seemed to be in home shop machining and then has sort of fallen off. I don't know if it's just because those machines didn't work that well or... It is interesting too that like from an industrial standpoint, I'm not going out and buying EDM. If I need to get something EDM for this Curta project, which I really don't want to do, but
yeah,
if I do, I'll just find somebody to do it for me. But... EDM machines you can actually pick up fairly inexpensively.
Yes, that's true. With all the
compared to like a mill, for example, like
with all the problems.
Yes, yes, you get all the problems, no charge. But I think sinkers generally are more resilient than the wire ones, obviously.
As far as I understand, yes. The
wires can have all kinds of problems.
Yes, like, and are quite expensive to operate.
Yeah, the wire is slightly expensive.
The wire, you have your filter cartridges for the water. You have the water itself, deionized water. But I think the machines can make that themselves.
They make the water? Like they got an RO unit on them or something?
I think you put normal distilled water into them and then they adjust the conductivity of the water themselves. Not entirely sure how. I could be talking my butt off here.
It's okay. You'll fit right in.
Very likely. But I personally would look for a Syncro EDM if I needed something.
Hmm.
I'm not buying one. No, no.
No? Oh, come on. You, of all of us, you're the one who needs an EDM machine.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's be real here.
Yeah, I could sneak into a real machine if I needed.
And you have three-phase power in your basement, so that's not a problem.
Oh, yes, 400 volts, three-phase, right out of the wall.
He doesn't realize how good he has it.
No kidding, like...
No, if I was in a pinch, I would take the work, tie a case of beer to it, and just sneak it close to an EDM machinist.
Do you even need the case of beer? They have vending machines there. We talked about that last episode. I'm still bitter about that here.
That's normal.
Yes, I know. I know. So the next topic I wrote here is your favorite fixture you've made. I think, Max, we should let you go first.
I had to think a while about that one. I guess there's a qualifier there. Do you mean fixture used in a machining operation or fixture used for bench work?
I'm not surprised you'd complicate it, but...
I'm not sorry.
I'm just teasing.
Hi, I'm the problem child.
Answer the question as you see fit. How's that?
It's an ambiguous question. All right, this is like me taking a test. This is, this reminds me of the Microsoft certification exams where you can't unambiguously answer the question because the question is ambiguous. But I digress. If we're talking about bench made, or rather fixtures for doing bench work, then definitely that little watch movement holder that I made. I still like that thing. I'll just fiddle with it sometimes.
Was that the thing you made at your dad's?
It is, actually.
I remember that. It's fantastic. And I think quite a few people find it very interesting. You should release plans for that, I think.
I did, actually.
Oh, did you? Oh. Yeah,
it's one of the set of plans that I put up on the Patreon page a while back. I feel like something like that, though, anybody who's going to actually make it is going to have probably no trouble just winging the design themselves based on, like, visually seeing it. You know what I mean? Nevertheless, if someone wants to build exactly that one, the plans are there.
That's true. It's kind of a personal item.
Yeah. And they're really not very complicated. They're just very satisfying to use. Especially since the commercially made ones seem to be so lacking in a lot of ways.
Are they all coming out of China, or...?
No, there's some Swiss ones. I'm sure the Swiss ones are very nice. I just haven't seen any of those that go to large capacity, which was the main reason that I built mine, is because I do a lot of large pocket watch movements, which most of them will do barely, but then if you get to something like... an example would be like the watch movements that they used in car clocks, automotive clocks back in the day. It was basically an oversized pocket watch that was mounted... inside the dashboard with the winding stem hanging down. And those are quite a bit larger than your typical large pocket watches. And this holder I made will actually take those things. And I've got several of those I need to work on someday.
Wow, I didn't even realize that. That makes sense.
I didn't consider those to be actual watches that you work on, or clocks.
Yep. It is literally a scaled-up pocket watch.
So, I'm curious, so when were they roughly, like, what would the time period be for those?
Yeah, I'm honestly not sure. I don't know much about the couple that I have. I do know that they are remarkably similar to devices that were sold as travel clocks back in the day. Like, the difference was, instead of being in a dashboard, they are mounted in a little clamshell, looks like a jewelry box or something, except you open it up and it's a little clock in there.
Huh. That's cool, though.
Huh.
So, I'm guessing early 1900s. I don't know when the cutoff would have been. It seems like... I don't know, actually, because...
So, you would get that with your Model T?
I suppose. I'm trying to think what... I mean, certainly some of the luxury brands back in the day would have had them, but I don't know if they were... ubiquitous, like if you bought a cheap car like the Model T, would it have had a clock? I'm really not sure. That might have been one of those like cutting edge luxury features back in the day. But like electric clocks, when did they come about? 60s maybe?
Yeah, I was just going to say.
Like a crystal watch.
Yeah, well, now this is fascinating. Somebody could do a podcast on the clock in the car.
I'm going to be honest, I'm not going to listen to that.
Oh, you would.
Yeah, maybe I would.
Max doesn't listen to podcasts. You know that, Stefan, right?
I don't. At least actually. He didn't. I always mean to. I've listened to a few episodes of others. Certainly some of the other machinist stuff that's out there.
Oh,
There's certainly some great stuff.
I binge listen to everything.
One of my kits I was on for a while was physical security and penetration testing. I still enjoy that stuff. This fellow named Deviant Olaf appeared on several podcast episodes that I listened to just because he was on them. But I tend to, I'll listen to a few episodes of random podcasts here and there, and I really don't regularly listen to any of them, not because I don't want to, it doesn't end up really happening.
Justin, do you listen regularly to podcasts?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Let's see. Where's my phone?
There we go. That's getting interesting.
I'll tell you, I just put my hand in my pocket. Never mind.
What?
I'm getting, easy. Like, so my podcast feed, Autoline this week, Autoline After Hours. Those ones are really good if you're in the automotive industry, specifically in the States. But Embedded, I listen to. The Kerry Newhoff Leadership Podcast, which is interesting. Making It, I listen to. Business of Machining, The Amp Hour with Intolerance. Fits All Podcast. I have our feed here, but I actually don't listen to us because we're horrible.
We have an RSS feed?
Yeah.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So, you didn't know that?
No.
Oh.
We also don't listen to us.
Lathe Night Podcast, I have that on here.
Excellent.
Those are the ones I usually listen to every week.
Cool.
I know you listen to Amp Hour because that was all over Instagram.
Wait a second. I have my phone out. Didn't put my hand into my pocket.
You didn't put your hand in your pocket.
No. I have the Amp Hour here. The Welding Tips and Tricks Podcast.
Okay. That's a good one too. Yeah.
Business of Machining. The Melt Zone, which is a German 3D printing podcast, but in English. Then 3D Printing Today, which obviously also 3D printing. Machinist Therapy Hotline. Wood Talk, which is a woodworking podcast.
Yikes.
What?
Yes.
I
listen to them forever, and I just enjoy it because it feels like I know these guys because I listen so long to them.
You listen to it for comic relief, right?
I kind of like it. Then Tested, the Adam Savage Project.
Okay, see, I listened to that for a while, and then I kind of gave up on that one.
it's hit and miss a little bit. DFX, Digital Fabrication Experiment Podcast.
Yeah, I do listen to that one occasionally. Yeah,
With Intolerance, Lathe Night, Star Talk Radio, with Neil deGrasse Tyson. That's like tech and science and blah, blah, blah. This podcast will kill you. That's about
ours.
No, the podcast is called like that. That's about deadly diseases and viruses and stuff like that.
Was that a recent add-on? Or
no, I listened to that for quite some time now.
Oh,
that's quite fun. Macrofab Engineering. That's also Makery Electronics and Engineering podcast. And Radiodrome, which is Radiodrome are three guys who are yelling about movies, and that older movies are better than new ones.
They're not wrong.
Yeah, they are absolutely correct. So yeah, that's my rundown of podcasts I listen
to. Cool. That's a long list.
That's a mess.
Hmm.
How did we go on that tangent?
That was my fault. I'm sorry. Yay. You got the Canadian to apologize. You feel better?
The show is complete.
What else are we supposed to do? Cars. We haven't talked about cars.
We haven't finished talking about fixtures yet.
Fixtures, you're right.
We'll talk about cars in a minute.
I had a candidate fixture in the eventuality that we were talking about just fixtures for machining operations.
Okay, yeah.
And in that case, I think my favorite would be the little arrangement I made for keeping the draw tube components held together for machining. For the little watchmakers, call it draw tubes. And that's is basically just a clamping fixture to keep the whole thing held together for drilling and tapping of the holes that hold the hand wheel handle, whatever you want to call it, to the main body.
So
nothing exotic. It's just a neat little thing that I enjoyed.
A very work specific fixture.
Yes,
not definitely. Not universal.
Correct.
I like specialized fixtures.
Me too.
That have no other use.
I agree.
I feel like of the three of us, Stefan probably has the market cornered on shop-made fixtures.
I cannot.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I was thinking about it, and the favorite thing that I made are probably the Ransetti 1-2-3 blocks in metric.
Oh, neat.
Basically 1-2-3 blocks that you can bolt together without any bolts sticking out to the side.
Right. Those are really cool.
That's an absolute cool design. Made four with holes, two without holes, just plain blocks, and like a large plate with the same hole pattern. And I used those quite a bit. Those were painful to make. Lots of hole drilling. Lots of cross drilling.
Mm-hmm. Now, is it true, like, how popular are 1-2-3 blocks in Europe?
They are not.
Okay. Interesting.
So what I've read is true. I have read that, it's really an American thing, but yeah, I didn't know if that was
very, very uncommon here. Here you have usually every toolmaker or machinist has, like, some ground blocks or large parallels in his drawers, but something like a 1-2-3 block is not very common.
That sounds uncomfortable.
Ugh.
I see what you did there.
In the drawers of his tool chest or tool. Yeah, we don't even have tool chests here. We have Lister cabinets.
Yes. More salt in the wound. It's okay. Yeah, so so it's true. They're not that popular. Do you know why that is?
No, not really. It just, I would like to give a good answer here, but I can't.
No, well, it's just that, like, here, like, 1-2-3 blocks, like, thank you to cheap imports, is almost cheaper than Lego.
Right.
Like you can buy a matched set, which they're of, I would say, dubious quality. But they're still
good enough
probably
for most people's
work. And you can buy them for like $15. I don't know. My head explodes whenever I read that, but it's interesting.
So I got a set of them that came with the tooling package for the mini mill that I bought. The same tooling package that included those end mills in the pine box.
Yes, that makes them very good, that
gold
box.
Coating, right. They're great, and I use them a lot. They're perfectly accurate enough for pretty much anything I do, but they don't have properly sized clearance holes.
No, that's the same as the ones I have.
Yeah,
my cheap ones.
I have a set of Moore 1-2-3 blocks.
I bet those are pretty nice. I'm going to go out on a limb.
They are decent. No, they are gauge block quality.
Right.
For a German to say like an American thing is decent, that's pretty good, Max.
They ring together. They ring together like gauge blocks.
I can only imagine.
What annoys me is even that the machine was sold in Germany and was delivered with basically metric. Everything on the machine, including the the 1-3 blocks is an Imperial.
It's good.
Yeah, that's not funny.
But, I don't know. I think it's pretty funny.
But fortunately, the 1-3 blocks came with the full kit with screws and the matching Allen heads and everything to use them.
Awesome. So those, I assume, the plain holes are clearanced for the threads, so you can actually bolt them together.
Right? Yes.
That's a nice feature. I mean, that's, you really want that instead of gauge blocks.
It makes them useful.
1-3 blocks, I mean.
When I get my surface grinder going, I'm going to make a set of 1-3 blocks.
Nice.
I can tell you, it's not as much fun as it sounds. It's basically a lot of drilling and grinding.
I know.
But kind of.
I think I'll just keep my eyes peeled for a decent used set. That's kind of what I decided on. I don't know. Have you tried machining yours, Justin? Maybe it's typical of some of the Far East import stuff where it's got maybe a hardish skin, but it's kind of like cheese underneath that.
Yeah, I think these are pretty soft.
Probably I could just drill out those holes and they'd be perfectly fine for most things.
Yeah, go to the hardware store and like see if you can find like a masonry bit. It probably would work.
Nice.
I found that if you get like the good ones, like the Bosch ones or like some other name brand one.
Hilti.
Hilti. Yeah, there we go. They actually work pretty good. Like surprisingly well.
So, good to know.
Like I've drilled holes in calipers with them. Like
wow.
Yeah, they're
rotors, you mean, or
with no, like you know, hardened measuring calipers.
I see.
Yeah.
Yeah, excellent. I was thinking car stuff for a second. So.
But I think you've said that too, Stefan. They can drill decent holes, and you can sharpen the ends because it's just a hunk of carbide brazed on the end.
Sharpen them like a drill for steel, and they will hard drill.
Basically, just a brazed spade bit, right?
Yep.
Yep. Basically.
I'm a fan of spade bits. You guys know that.
The 1800s have called. They want their drills back.
For small stuff, when you're talking like, you know, 6/1000ths of an inch diameter, spade bit's kind of what you want there.
I'm typing in my calculator what 6 thou are. Oh, that's 0.15 millimeter.
Yeah, that's pretty small.
Yeah, that's small.
I mean, I've tried using carbide twist drills for stuff in that range, and yeah, when they cut nice, but it's only a matter of time till you break them.
It ends,
and then you're really screwed. Yeah,
and they don't break very loud.
No, they don't. It just stops working, and then you realize your part's ruined, and you got to start over.
Yeah, there's a hunk of carbide in the bottom of your part.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, the spade drills are you can get carbide spade drills that size, I'm sure, but it's not really necessary for most things, and it's nice to have the resilience of carbon steel or high-speed steel with stuff that small.
What's that noise?
I don't know.
Are you doing work, Stefan?
No. Oh. No, actually not.
It sounded like a drill. Somebody was using a drill to countersink something.
It did. It wasn't me. I was just looking at my little set of spade drills. I wasn't actually using them.
You used those to finish that project you posted, didn't you?
I did. One of my shop made ones, actually, because I was kind of in a bind with the center drills weren't really flying. I've got this little set that comes in a wooden block, the typical, they call them pivot drills in watchmaking. And they're just really, really tiny spade bits that are in a small slip of wood. And I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 out of the 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 that were originally in the set. The rest are broken.
How do you make them yourself? Do you take some hardened stock and just stone them to shape, or
you You can. You can take just a hard wire that's already the right diameter and just shape the end.
Mm-hmm.
I like to have a particular shank diameter on them. So I've always just used usually 01, but it's hard to find a small diameter. Sometimes you got to settle for W1 water hardening instead mm-hmm. of oil hardening. Just turn the basic shape and just a little bit of, if it's a larger one, file first to rough it in. If it's a small one, you can just do it on a stone easily enough.
Hmm. Okay.
It's pretty much the same thing that I... Oh, maybe I didn't do that. So I did a video a while back where I made a milling cutter, and I guess I didn't show the spade bits in that, but I used the blue marker to judge when you're shaping up to the cutting edge.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same trick I use on the spade bits, just when they're really small, you need some magnification to be able to see what's going on. I remember doing a video where I showed a lot of the shop-made drills and cutters that I've made, but I guess I've never done a video showing actually making one of the spade drills. It's pretty much straight out of any of the old watchmaker's books, though.
Huh.
It's not a very sophisticated geometry at all, and in fact, if you want to make a good profile for drilling steel that's been hardened and tempered, it's even easier to make, because you don't have to worry about coming to an accurate center as much as with the others. It ends up being more of a rounded shovel shape, I guess you'd say.
I have to look into that. That's interesting.
I'll send you some pictures from George Daniel's watchmaking book that,
okay.
mm-hmm. that show the relevant stuff there. It's pretty interesting.
Have you read the Amateur's Lathe book, Stefan?
I think I have it.
He doesn't go into as detail as the book Max said, like Daniel's book.
Okay.
He talks about them in there. Because, like when that book was written, buying drills was expensive, right?
Yeah. I mean, they're cheap now, but sometimes they get you out of a bind if you don't want to have to. Especially now, where even Amazon shipping probably isn't going to be 2 days.
Yeah.
2 days?
Yeah, how is Amazon shipping in Germany, Stefan?
Well, next day.
Still?
If you're Prime, yes.
Wow.
It's hit or miss.
It's a month.
Wow.
It's a month, Max. Like, if I order something on Amazon, and I have Prime,
right.
I used to get it, like, next day or 2 days, and it's a month out right now.
So I found it's hit or miss. A lot of the things I've looked at, especially... tooling and raw materials.
Well, marketplace like articles are slow or slower. But everything that's
right.
fulfilled by Amazon is still very quickly here. Usually next day. Comes with DHL.
Hmm. Gotcha. So a good example is I ordered on Friday a new primary for our oil burner on our boiler. And it was supposed to arrive... Monday, which I thought was pretty good, you know, actual 2 day shipping, great. And while we've been recording here, I saw the Prime guy just deliver it to the doorstep and leave. Oh, it's here already.
Oh.
Oh, you get the Amazon delivery service?
Yes.
Okay.
It depends. Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't.
It's the same here. Like the Uber version of Amazon delivery.
Yeah.
Essentially is what it is, I think.
I believe so.
Yeah.
Yeah, here most of Amazon comes via DHL.
Interesting.
Which is basically also the German postal service.
Oh, is it?
I did not realize that.
They have different tiers, but basically it's kind of the same. Usually the guy who brings you the letters also drops off the DHL packages.
Huh, very cool.
If it's not on a pallet.
Right.
So is the postal system in Germany, I'm sure, is like nationalized or whatever, right? Like,
no, it's privatized.
Like, oh, is it?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
It's privatized since a few years. DHL is a... Or the post is a German post service is... a publicly traded company, as far as I know.
Wow. If not even Canada or the States have that.
Or is
it? I had no idea that was the case.
No, like ours still is government owned and obviously U.S. Post.
Right.
Or U.S. Postal yes, Service.
Yes, it's publicly traded.
Wow. Well, that, I guess that would make sense why DHL makes deliveries.
could be worse. DHL is really, really good here.
No, anything I've had delivered here is by DHL has been fantastic.
Same here. I don't know about where you are, Justin, but the only stuff I've ever had delivered, by DHL has been very large items. So when I bought my Chinese 3-in-1 lathe years ago, for example, that came DHL. It seems like it's pretty much trucking service here, freight service.
Right. It's kind of similar here. I've noticed that, like, I don't buy that much stuff off. I don't think I've ever actually bought anything off AliExpress or whatever. But I did order one of those 5C Collet Chucks, and I ended up ordering it through Korea, which was interesting, but it seems that all the stuff, if you order stuff from China, it's delivered DHL here.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and then if there's brokerage assigned to it, that's if it can't fit in the mail. If it can't fit in the mail, usually they ship it DHL. And then I had something where there was some brokerage due to DHL, and they send you an email and you can pay, and then they just, it's fantastic.
It's not cheap.
No, but at least, like, the way it usually works here, Stefan, is, like, somebody shows up to your door, you're not home, they put the sticky on your door saying you owe brokerage, right? We're going to come back tomorrow, but you can't schedule them, so you got to drive, at least, you know, where I live, like, the closest terminal is, like, 50 minutes away, so I have to drive 50 minutes to go pick it up at the terminal, and then, like, you know what I mean, DHL, they sent me an email, I paid, they dropped it off at my door, it was fantastic.
Perfect.
Nice.
I sound grumpy or something?
The worst thing for me is always when I order something from the US and get shipped via USPS. That's the worst. As soon as it leaves the US, the tracking stops. And you have basically no idea where your package is.
That's interesting. I know when stuff's coming into the U.S. from other countries into U.S. Post, you get visibility into the tracking from the outside. I'm surprised that it doesn't happen the other way. It's pretty wild.
But it seems to have gotten better because I ordered some electronics kits from the U.S. and this time the USPS tracking seems to work. But the package is taking its way over Tokyo in Japan.
That makes total sense.
It started in Seattle.
What?
Then it went to Portland, San Francisco, Tokyo, and it seems to be in Frankfurt now, Germany. So that's...
Any week now you'll have it.
Was this like a millennial that just graduated or something?
Yeah, kind of. I hope to get it this year.
Good luck. So, Justin, what are some of your favorite ShopMade fixtures?
You know, I was thinking about this. I don't have... Like, I have some things that I made. I think, as odd as this sounds... One of the favorite things I've made are proper vise hold down clamps for my milling vise. Like, I know that's really not really a fixture, but
it is.
No, it's not. It is. Is it?
I think so. If you take a book on fixture design, the most basic fixture is like a clamp, a strap clamp, or hold down clamps. So, I say it counts.
I made it a few years ago now, and like when I use them, I'm just, you know, before you see lots of people that just use like sometimes janky stuff, and that's fine. We're not here to judge, but that's one of the things I'm thankful that I made. I still want to go through and make a proper like clamp down kit because I find the import ones are trash. They're way too big. I don't know. Maybe I'm just being grumpy.
What, but... You don't like an M16 bolt to hold down a tiny part?
No, no.
Okay.
I know we've talked about this on the podcast before.
Did we?
I don't know if you were here, but I know Max and I talked about getting like a nice small hold down clamp kit.
Was it the same episode where I was mentioning the clamps I made for the mill that I wasn't sure what to call them?
Yeah, I think it was actually.
They pull down as you tighten and sort of bind the ends of the work.
Oh,
they don't stick up above it at all. Maybe.
Yeah. It's like shop made bulldog kind of.
Huh. I standardized on M8 and M6 hold down studs, so relatively small. But an M8 bolt, 8mm diameter, can hold quite a bit.
Oh sure. Yeah. Yeah.
And M6 is small enough to. Yeah, to be out of the way most of the time.
Yeah, so that's I got a list of tools I need to make that's a mile long. And now that I'm building a Curta, it's like 2 miles long.
I still haven't made a sign bar yet.
Oh, I bought somebody's one that they made dirt cheap, actually.
Nice.
That's close to cheating.
I know. It came with my Mitutoyo Tents DTI, like 0.0001. I know tents can be.
Nice.
Right, not 0.01.
Ambiguous.
Right.
I just learned what a micro inch is. So that a micro inch is the same as a millionth. And that about 40 millionth are 1 micron.
Yep, that sounds right.
So.
We're into Rossetti territory.
So
right,
I'm learning.
You better be careful, though. You could get, you know, burned at the stake for some of this stuff where you live.
We stopped burning people for different measuring systems about 10 years ago.
Oh, so you're safe. Good. Is what you're saying.
Yep.
Do your friends think you're a secret American? I do want to know.
They think I'm weird.
You kind of feel like, you know, like Richard Hammond on Top Gear, where they always pick on him for being a secret American.
It always comes back to Top Gear.
It always comes back to Top Gear. That's true.
I posted on Instagram last night. I was watching Classics with my boy.
Yes. Yeah. But that looked like one of the special episodes. Like one of their...
Which one?
Like one of their large tours around Bolivia or something like that.
No, that is on that season, but we were watching the one where they were trying to find the best road in Europe.
Ah, excellent.
So, speaking of cars, any car updates? How's the Fiat doing?
The Fiat is good. The bearings which hold the front shocks in place are broken.
Or worn out?
Worn out. They make a nice clunk clunk sound when you steer.
Yep.
Yeah, that's because it's a Chrysler product.
And how? I have 2 Chrysler products, by the way.
Apart from that, the Fiat is doing very nicely. It has 160,000 kilometers on it and runs just fine.
That's actually a fair bit. How long is your drive to work?
30 kilometers one direction.
That's probably further than you, Max, isn't it?
I'm too lazy to fire up Google and do conversions, but it's roughly 20 miles each way.
You're
for me.
Further. You're further. 1.6.
Okay.
Oh, that it's almost the same.
Yeah.
20 miles is 32 kilometers, and some change. No, apart from that, no car updates.
Max got new tires, I think.
Yes.
Did we talk about that?
Just in the rear, because, you know, apparently the front ones are going to last forever and the rear ones will need to be changed every season.
So they are round and black?
Yep, they sure are.
Very good.
I put dirt cheap Coopers on there last time, and I wasn't really expecting to get much out of them. I was planning on running snow tires in the winter, so I figured I'd, you know, maybe get a couple seasons out of them, given that I'd only be running them half of the year. But I didn't end up getting snow tires. They did okay in the snow. I just lived without them. So yeah, basically got a season out of the Coopers, and I spent more on some Goodyear Eagles this time. And if I use Tire Rack for tire reviews because they make it easy to filter by the types of vehicle that people are writing the review for. You know, because one model of tire might behave very differently wear-wise on one vehicle versus another. You know, weight of the vehicle, drivetrain configuration, all that stuff. So other similar vehicles, people were getting between 30 and 50,000 miles. So I would be happy enough with something in that range, but we'll see how it goes.
I haven't been driving anywhere, so...
But gas is cheap.
The gas,
yeah, it sure is
super cheap.
Even in Germany?
Yes, it's like 1 euro a liter for diesel.
Wow, that is actually cheap.
Cheapest price I've seen here so far is 171.9 down the street per gallon.
Well, I was looking at Texas crude selling for like $2 a barrel right now.
Oh, you're buying a barrel of crude oil for yourself?
I'm just stocking up, okay?
Okay. And then the neighbors will wonder, huh?
No, but there's analysts saying that there may be negative oil price.
So you get money when you buy it.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure we won't pay.
I'm not.
They won't pay us to take it.
I don't understand how that works. I also ordered fuel oil for the house heating because it's so cheap.
Ah, yes.
Which is basically diesel that you cannot,
yep,
that you're not allowed for tax reasons to run in your car.
Correct. I use the same thing here for our boiler. Number two heating oil.
Yeah, just...
Are you saying you dump it in your car? Is that what you're saying?
No.
No.
It's
a bit thick, isn't it?
No, it's like diesel.
It's the same.
It's
diesel.
Oh, is it?
But yeah. But it has a coloring agent in it that will fluorescent when you shine a UV light in the tank.
Right. So they can make sure you've paid your tax on
the... And it will produce a horrendous smoke cloud out of the exhaust.
Really?
Yes.
There have been times when I've been in a pinch and had to put diesel fuel in the oil tank, like we ran too low in the middle of winter or whatever. But I've never tried it the other way around. I've never burned number two in a diesel engine.
And when my dad was younger, that seems to be more popular. Run fuel oil in a diesel.
Well, that's when you need like my 91 Jetta, you know, naturally aspirated diesel.
Oh yeah.
As long as you can pour it in the filler neck, it would burn it. Okay.
it's running on everything that's half liquid and burns at least a bit.
Fryer grease.
Yeah. I knew someone who ran a VW Passat on frying grease.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
It stank horrendous.
It depends on what kind of food they cooked in the grease.
Yeah, fries. Fries and fish. Fries and fish.
Fish would be bad, I think.
It was nightmare.
You get the stuff from Thai restaurants. It smells like peanuts.
it was really a nightmare, but he was driving cheap.
Yep.
Oh, and the power output was also a little bit meh.
Well,
when you already don't have much, what's a little bit less, right?
Yeah, that car, if it's naturally aspirated, had 52 horsepower, Stefan. It's the only car in my life that I've driven with my foot to the floor in every gear, all the time. Like,
and it was fun, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, it was just fantastic. It is actually a good car. Now, Max, take note. Your boy's getting older. It's a good car for your first car because it really makes you think about cutting out in front of people.
Right.
Yeah, otherwise you die.
Yes, yes.
It's like my first car was a Fiat Panda with 60 horsepower, and it was even the four-wheel drive, so even less.
Wow.
That was coming out on the end.
Right.
Because it had all the four-wheel drivetrain dragging on. And overtaking with that thing was...
not feasible?
Kind of an adventure. Kind of an adventure.
Oh, that's funny.
But in the winter, it was the king. On snow, it got everywhere.
Gotta love small all-wheel drive cars.
Yep. And super simple four-wheel drive. Not even... it had the... Like a Haldex... what's that called?
I know Haldex. It's VW uses it.
Yeah, a very similar system that automatically turns on the four-wheel drive one once the front axle gets a little bit of slippage. Then the...
Yeah.
The rear axle starts to keep up, and it works brilliantly.
Yeah. That's what my R32 had.
The Golf?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Didn't know that was four-wheel drive. Four-motion,
yeah, all of the R32s were.
Okay.
Did you sell that, Max?
I did. I can't remember if that was before or after our last recording, but yes, finally. It just, stuff kept breaking. Like, every time I showed it to a new person, something else would be broken. It was terrible. It hated sitting.
Yeah, it's called a Volkswagen.
They're I the like most, them, but... They're the most Italian-German car, I swear.
I can tell you that my Fiat has never broken down.
Excellent. Well, you use it. That helps.
That's true.
I never had a lick of trouble with the R32 until it just started sitting.
It's like an angry cat sitting there and just waiting.
Yep.
Yes, that's precisely it.
It sounded like it too.
Sitting there defecating on the driveway.
It sounded more like a Wookiee that was on fire.
you had a YouTube video with the car in it, and somebody in the comments, it was like...
They're like, oh, you need to get your exhaust fixed. I was like, man, that's the factory exhaust. Nothing's broken, dude.
That was hilarious.
YouTube's fantastic.
Oh, it's the worst.
That's comment gold.
Oh, speaking of cars and podcasts, I know Max, you're a fan of
cars.
Oh, that's cars. Yes, you're a fan of cars. Doug DeMuro.
Oh, I love Doug DeMuro.
So he was a guest on this on the Autoline After Hours podcast.
Oh, I gotta listen.
Yeah, not the last episode, but the one before. It was it's pretty good because he's a YouTuber too, so he talks about YouTube and stuff. Nice. Basically, it was fascinating because he goes, I don't want to spoil too much of it, but he goes into kind of the behind the scenes, how he does what he does.
Yeah.
And he's literally like he has a little bit of help by the sounds of it, but he's like a one-man band still.
Yeah.
He does all his own editing still, and he talks about YouTube commenters like complaining about what he's wearing and stuff like that. So
people will always find something to complain about just because they want to be heard or whatever.
Hey, your paper towels in the background are empty.
Right. Thanks a lot there, Captain Helpful.
They will see everything.
Yeah.
I tempted, but not, because I am working on another YouTube video about leaving Chuck Keys in everywhere I go.
The secret troll.
But I know from a safety standpoint it's not the best, but at the same time it's...
Well, what you should do is nest as many Chucks as you can and leave keys in all of them.
Oh, that'd be funny.
Headstock and tailstock.
Yes. That is the key holder. That's what it is. Then I don't lose it.
Right.
Actually, it would work pretty good on my lathe because it's got, like, it's the cam lock, so I can leave a key in the cam lock, and I can leave a key in the...
Yeah, mount your 5C chuck inside that chuck, and then find a I don't know, Jacob's taper chuck for your tailstock or something, throw it in there.
Oh, now you're getting ridiculous.
I thought that ship had already sailed.
Oh. Well, there is always room for less.
That is, it's hard to argue with that logic.
Speaking of camlock, your Tormark lathe has camlock spindle, hasn't it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, D14. Okay. Of course, it wouldn't be D13. I actually prefer it to be D14 because it's way more popular. But my standard modern's D13, so, which is an oddball.
Yeah, my MCO lathe has a number 3 short taper, which is the same as the D13, just without cam lock. And it's not easy to get back plates for it at all.
Hello there, I own a Rivet.
That's a threaded spindle. Isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, better get a large tap.
It's a non-standard thread, just to be clear.
Better get a large non-standard tap.
Have you made a backplate for it, or you got like boatloads of tooling, right?
I did make a...
I
made one backplate and I made one adapter. So I had a little dividing head for a while that had the same spindle thread as the old 6-inch Craftsman lathes. Pretty, pretty small thread. I made an adapter to go from that to the Rivet thread to use some of my chucks on it. So that was the male thread that I made, obviously. And then I made a backplate shortly after I first got the machine. So I've cut both the internal and external version of that oddball thread.
So I'm curious, the backplate that Rivet... So do you have a backplate that was made by Rivet? Do you know?
I guess I'm not sure. I don't know if they would have put a name. It would probably have a number. That's what you see on the Rivet stuff, is they'll all get numbers on them in the same, like, pretty distinct ornate font. Like, they're stamped, but they had these stamps with a... interesting font on them. I'll have to take a closer look. I'm really not sure.
I'm curious if they had it. Do they have any method to lock it on? Or
No, it's just threaded with a good fit on the shoulder.
Right, because I know Shoblin had like a... Some of them have a slot cut in it, right?
Yes.
And then it like clamps, and you can put... They have a cap screw that you tighten down.
Or they have just the ring around the boss of the backplate, and that's enough to pull the fit close enough so it doesn't come off if you run it in reverse.
Right.
It just pinches on it like a shaft collar.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. To be honest, I'm not a real fan of short taper. Like, it's good. It's just so small. It's really small.
But it's crazy stiff.
Yeah, that's true.
With the dual contact. I was really surprised at how well the Harding taper works. When I saw that first in photos, it really looks a little bit dinky.
Mm-hmm.
But understanding how it works with the pin that pulls it on the taper, that seems to be a really good system.
Yeah.
But you cannot load it in both directions fully. Otherwise, it will probably unscrew itself or unlock.
It could, I suppose. And then, like, Tony's lathe, is that... which taper is that one?
That's an American long taper.
L0, right, that, I believe.
L0, you said?
I think so.
Yeah,
that's very odd over here. Very hard to get.
It's not that common here, I don't think, either. To be honest.
The only reason I know about it is from the video he had about making backplates for it.
I know. Yes. Same here.
Yeah, over here, most common is short taper and cam lock with short taper.
Cam lock is convenient.
Yeah, it's quite
I don't
fast.
Think I've ever even used a machine with cam lock.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I use ancient all our, stuff, man.
Well, all the lathes I had when I was in high school were all standard modern, so they all had cam lock.
Nice.
It works pretty good.
Yeah, it's quick to change chucks.
Yeah. So, you guys got anything else? I have one other thing.
I do not have anything else.
I do not.
We did the Discord server, right?
Yes.
And so the only thing we have is Emma's toolmaking competition, which I thought...
Oh, was that time, time year, again?
We should plug it, although most people who probably were listening to this podcast quit in our end of... after last year's finale, so this season we're back.
Over doing seasons now.
Yes, this is season two.
Okay.
You didn't know that?
No.
We talked about this last episode.
I think I didn't get that note. have to talk to my office.
Yeah, do you have an agent yet?
Unfortunately not. I don't even have an editing person for video.
Oh, are you looking for one?
No.
Oh.
Nobody wants to work for that cheap. But the benefits are good.
What?
As much tap water as you want.
Tap water? Are you sure you're not part Dutch?
I was just going to say that.
I know I called you a secret American, but I don't know.
A secret Dutchman.
Yes.
I'm just cheap.
That'd be
Have I told the Dutch joke on here before?
Which one?
The difference between wooden shoes and cowboy boots?
I don't remember it if you
I
did.
I don't remember it.
Go for
you
it.
You don't? No, so what is the difference between wooden shoes and cowboy boots?
Do tell.
Okay, so with cowboy boots, the fecal material's on the outside.
Oh. Wow.
And there goes our Dutch audience.
I full disclosure, I am half Dutch, and my Oma and Opa thought the joke was funny. Bless them when they were still here. I did tell them that joke.
Is that joke what did them in?
No. Well, you know, like the copper wire joke too. You know how they make copper wire. You don't know this one either?
I feel like it's related to two Dutchmen fighting over a penny, but I guess the details are fuzzy.
Yes, that's it. Yes, okay. You throw up a penny between two Dutch people, and then you have copper wire.
Oh man, that's
good. Oh, that's less bad than the other one.
Yeah.
Oh,
my apologies to Dutch people, but I am half Dutch, so I can make fun of you.
I have a German one.
You do?
How many Germans does it take to change a light bulb?
Oh.
One. We're highly efficient, but not very funny.
I like that. It's good.
And we're going to use that to start the episode.
Oh, it's so good.
And maybe a track from Filter. I don't know. I'm going to see.
Excellent.
Royalty-free music. Yay.
Except it's not royalty-free.
What?
No, technically not. But I think we could probably wrangle some permission.
Yeah. I can ask him if you want. It's been a while since I've messaged him, but he seems to respond.
Oh, yeah. I actually been buying some music off him. I figured, hey, well, what the heck.
Cool.
One of the downloads didn't work, so I emailed him, and he emailed me back personally, like, yeah, I fixed it for you. So,
Yeah, he seems to be just a one-man show over there.
And I asked him about the, using his music back when I did the, I think it was the turret build.
Yeah, for the tool-making competition.
Yeah, and I had some great back and forth with him, and I ended up buying a signed copy of one of his albums and everything just because he was such a cool guy.
It's not metal music, though, Stefan, so don't get too excited.
Mm. And how?
Sad noise.
So, speaking of the tool-making competition...
Yes.
Is there a particular theme this year?
I don't know, Stefan. What do you say?
As far as I know, there is no topic this year.
No, it's wide open.
Full disclosure, I'm not sure.
No, it's pretty much wide open. I think Emma wasn't sure what to do because of the situation, and I'm assuming the Barzee Summer Bash has been postponed.
I assume so.
But they are still doing one. I think they're doing it for pride or for bragging rights, I believe.
That's the most important.
Which is probably the reason why most people entered it in the past. So
sure. Well, pardon the elephants upstairs.
Oh, there we go.
It's okay. There was a mixmaster running in the house. I could hear it in the shop. So I don't know if I will enter. We'll see. I have a few things that I need to make, but
that's your chance.
I'll need to have a think about it. Seems like that should be doable. Consult my list of projects that never seems to get any shorter. I'm sure I can find something.
Yes, we're all waiting for another video, Max.
I should.
Yeah, it'll happen at some point. I don't know, I guess, what the next one will be. I guess I really wanted to do one for that little part I made on the watchmaker's lathe. It's just, it got to a point where I made enough mistakes on the first part and had to start over enough times that I was like, I don't want to jeopardize this by, wasting time trying to get good video and stuff like that. I just wanted to make it and get it over with. And it's a good thing. I should send you the picture of the little graveyard of parts. I made 6 scrap parts of this thing. That includes a redesign that we made halfway through it. Nevertheless, in each design, I scrapped at least 3 parts. It was terrible.
Yeah, there are days like that.
It was, yeah. I had a weekend to do it, basically, and I used all the time I had.
Yeah, I've been on projects like that where you start recording and then stuff starts going bad quickly, and yep, then you're like, I'm putting the camera away.
Yes.
At that point, it doesn't become fun to record. It's correct. Just like,
yes,
I'm done.
I had that happen to me too. Where you start, and on the first few operations, something goes kaput, and then, yeah.
It's not going to be a family-friendly video anymore.
Guess I'm doing...
Well, so a lot of people complain on... Not to make it sound like people are complaining on YouTube, but it happens, so I'm told. But people complain, they say, well, all you show is good stuff. And there are people who show bloopers, and I think that's cool and stuff. But people don't understand what social media is.
Right.
Social media is your highlight reel, right?
Yes, it's your resume.
Yeah, it's like when you go to somebody's house and you look through their photo albums, right? Like, people don't take pictures of when you got in a fight with your spouse. Like, I don't know how it works at your house, Max, but we don't break out the rebel when we're fighting, right? Like,
right.
Just hold on a second. We need this one for the pic. Like, so to think that, like, on social media, you're expecting people to post garbage, like,
right.
I don't know.
I mean, sometimes it's fun to have like a blooper reel or whatever, but generally,
yeah,
you're not showing that stuff.
Yeah,
just because why
I agree.
Would you?
Yeah, but you're not showing when you're cursing from the deepest of your heart.
Right.
Yeah,
that's a lot of beeps.
Yes.
Anyway, I'll get off my box right now. Just put it away. I think we can call this a show. Are we over 2 hours?
We are 2:32.
Yeah, 2 and a... Probably
did
by the time you take all the dead space out of there, it'll be just about 2 hours. Just like usual.
Did we talk... Okay, let's go through the checklist. Did we talk about beer?
Yes.
Check.
Okay, cars.
Yes.
Did somebody make an off-color joke?
I hope so.
I think you did.
Yes. Okay. what else?
Machining? I
think that's it, though. Machining. We did talk about machining. Yes, that's right. We had to talk about machining.
Okay.
Precisely. I think that's all of it, right?
I think you're right.